tuning in to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
I'm all out of love. Yes, yes. Classic 80s. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the American Season 3 panel. This night, we are reviewing Episode 3 called Open House. I'm Adrian Snow. You can follow me at Miss Adrian Snow, A-D-R-I-A-N-S-N-O-W, on Instagram. And what are my lovely host
Did you
name?
Call me a ghost?
I can't call you a
I'm
ghost.
I'm a living person, please.
You're talking. Go ahead. It's all you.
I'm Josh Richman. You should follow me on Twitter or Radio TFB.
He's living. He's right here.
I'm real. This guy's real,
yep,
too.
Yep. You can follow me at Julian Dujeric on Instagram and Twitter.
My name is Ben Bateman, and I'm Ben Bateman Media on all social media platforms. So that's where I'm at.
Yes, as always, please, please, please rate us on iTunes, follow us, subscribe to us, love on us on all channels, YouTube, yeah. iTunes, follow us on Twitter, Instagram.
Don't forget about SoundCloud.
SoundCloud.
Great platform.
Everyone.
We're really hard to find, you guys.
We have an indie rock band called The Americans, and you can download our songs on SoundCloud.
Yes.
I play the tambourine.
I play the drums.
I play the cowbell.
There we go.
I caught all the cool ones. I'll play bass.
No guitar in this
band. Somebody's
got to
play
bass. No guitar.
It's just percussion.
Anyways.
It's a percussion band.
So jumping forward, let's just jump right into it. First impressions for everyone?
Good episode. I think continuing the dramatic trajectory of the season so far, it felt very much like the first two. But a little early to have, I thought, such a big scare with the big, like, dramatic chase. That felt a lot like the final episode of season one, actually.
Well, sure. I mean, because we are in episode three and we know how these season-long arcs work, we realize that, Elizabeth's not going to be caught this episode, right?
Right.
So it's a little bit of a, you know she's going to get out of this situation.
That's what I mean.
Nonetheless, it was a great scene.
It was in terms of one
of their best suspense set pieces so far this season.
Agreed, but my problem with it was that when you do something like that so early and you know that it's not going to happen, it's kind of like when the hero is tied to a chair and the supervillain has him 20 minutes of the movie. It's like, well, something's going to get him out of this, so I'm not really that worried.
I thought it was great because I think it's more interesting, not because you think Elizabeth's really going to get caught, more about what it says about we've talked about how vulnerable she's made herself a couple of times this season.
Careless.
And it's just continuing that streak that she's getting really careless and getting really, really close to getting caught.
I find that to be interesting. And then, Julian, please give us what you think as well. Because how did they get caught? Like, I don't think it was necessarily her fault. And I'm curious to see, like, who called them out? Was it somebody who called in and was like, I saw a woman touch her face really painfully at this open house? Or was it the guy that they were investigating, Ted Paswell, who was able to say, hey, I'm being tracked right now? So that's what I'm more curious about than any of the chase stuff. It's just like, well, who did it? And Jolene, what did you think?
I agree with you. I think that was kind of random in how they just introduced that whole element.
Yeah.
I chalk it up to maybe Elizabeth's carelessness in her operations. I don't know. That is a good question. I'm not sure.
I'm not sure.
I wondered that too.
My only guess is it might I think a lot of things are going to end up tracing back to like the very first scene of this season where she really almost got caught.
Yeah.
Like, you know, a couple CIA agents saw her face. I think maybe I got to go back and rewatch the episode, but I think maybe they even got a look at her car.
Well, they kind of wrapped that up, and they never use the same car. They always ditch cars. But they kind of wrapped that up when Stan walks in, and he's talking to the FBI director, and he's like, well, listen, it was dark, and the first thing she did was hit our faces. Because when he's saying that, Stan is holding up two pictures of what they said were what she looked like, and they were two completely different images.
And he's like, oh, she's really good with disguises.
Yeah. So I would say that I don't think the reason they got caught this time was because of Elizabeth. I do think she was careless at the end where she was like, let's just drive by and get a visual.
No question.
I mean, that might come back. Got it to bite her in
ninja
the,
skills.
In the bottom.
Two episodes in a row. I got to wait. No, who did it? No, you did it.
That was me.
Sorry.
I caught the last one.
I'm curious to see, you know, who was the person that gave them up. I also kind of have just this curiosity about Gabriel and if maybe he's playing two sides, because they kind of play on that a little bit. they kind of touched on it in a way where when Agent Alderholt is saying, oh no, when Stan is telling Agent Alderholt, like, you just tell them what they want to hear. They do stuff like that at the Americans. They have a character say a one-off line that ties into something else completely different that you see like five episodes down the line, mm-hmm. where it's just like, you just tell someone what they want to hear because that's how you convince them that you are part of their team. That's how you make them feel like they're right.
Well, yeah, I think it wants. Oh, sorry. I think that line wants you to be suspicious of a couple.
Oh, yeah.
And
it's perfect.
Definitely. I think the Frank Langella concern is totally real. One thing I noticed about this show, and this is obviously very consistent with the last 5 years of television, is now that you're getting very established, and in his case, Oscar-nominated movie actors in, you know, primetime shows, but like that guy's like a masterclass actor. Like, he's one of the greats, like, of this generation. Like, the guy is amazing, so...
And you gotta assume they're not just bringing him in to play, like, the happy grandpa character.
Right.
You know, he's gotta have some ulterior motive or some purpose.
Yeah, I think, and it's also really interesting when you look at the whole cast of the show, and you see that, like, Noah Emmerich, who's another guy who's been in a ton of great movies. I mean, the guy is very established, and it's, you know, it's headlined by Kerry Russell. I was having this conversation with somebody last night. We take, say, Breaking Bad, which is, like, one of the iconic shows of this generation, almost for granted as, like, that's one of the five best performances in the last 20 years. And when you don't have a guy of that, or an actor of that caliber necessarily headlining a show, it's hard to carry a show no matter what. So Kerry Russell would have to be...
I think it's really interesting because, well, this is Kerry Russell's second time headlining a show, and Felicity, which everyone's like...
Very different kind
Felicity
of show.
Felicity was awesome, though, and it ran for, like, 6 years. And a lot of people hold Bryan Cranston to such an esteem nowadays, but... Before Breaking Bad, he was, that guy who played the dad and Malcolm in the Middle.
Totally.
So, it really is just about developing that. You can be, I was talking with someone this yesterday, you can be an amazing actor. You can have that talent, but it really takes someone going, hey, I'm going to give you this role, and it's so amazing. You can do whatever you want with it. It takes somebody having that faith that makes you iconic.
I'm sure Kerry Russell was thrilled to get a role as good as, like, Elizabeth on The Americans after, like, a long time in the wilderness. It just happens for even really great actors and actresses.
Don't get me wrong, she does a good job, but I mean, I still find myself a little bit being like, I don't really entirely believe that she would be able to, like, destroy people in fights, and, like, there's parts of me that are still just like,
she's 5'3" and, like, 100 pounds. Yeah.
I believe her more than Angelina Jolie.
And I think, when you see someone of her kind of physical stature, of course you don't believe that she can kind of take down 6'2", whatever, you know, the 200-pound men, but she is a spy, and you kind of have to suspend disbelief a little bit in that regard.
Totally.
And she does play, I mean, to me, she does play it realistically, and she's a badass.
She's awesome.
Yeah, she does a good job.
Krav Maga, because I am trained in Krav Maga,
that's right.
Actually does level the fighting field between a man and a woman.
You're trained? Really?
Yeah. So it's just more about, like, speed and taking them down as quickly as possible. Like,
well, it's interesting you mentioned that, because I did see her, I don't want to butcher where it was that I saw this, but it was on one of those morning shows. Mm-hmm. She was actually promoting the show just a couple weeks back, and they actually do train in Krav Maga. I didn't know that.
Yeah,
that's the training for the show. So
because it's really just about quick, hard hits as quickly as possible, and using as much agility and upper body strength as possible so you don't end up...
Yeah, no. This is intense training. Do you know both Matthew Reese and Kerry Russell had to kill a man to get on The Americans?
That is a lie. In case you can't see our faces, you know, listening. I just want you to know. But so let's just jump into it. Let's talk about the page problem is what I've entitled it.
What a problem it is.
Yes. So everybody wants Paige to be a spy, pretty much, except for Philip. And I gotta say, I side with Philip. And
of course, how could you not?
Yeah,
you want this teenage girl to become a KGB spy?
So it's kind of like an ongoing story of just like, what are they gonna do? And it's kind of being stretched out a bit much. But this time, we actually did get a better introduction to Hans, who's kind of like, I feel like, the surrogate Paige, where we're seeing Elizabeth kind of do this with someone else, though he is doing it willingly and he's aware of it. What are everyone's thoughts on that right now?
I am waiting. I mean, I think the reason they're stretching this storyline out is I'm waiting for the moment where they go after Paige later in the season and behind their backs, mm-hmm. and then they have to like betray their country and go on some awesome like revenge. I mean, it probably won't happen, but that, yeah. like
they do what?
Yeah, I mean, I just like maybe they go after Paige, and then Matthew Reese goes kind of crazy and he has to like take someone down for going behind his back. I don't know. It seems like it'd be kind of an awesome thing. Have it happen. It might happen. I mean, they're dragging it out for like a pretty long time.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, it seems like Matthew Reese would. I mean, he's doing everything in his power to make sure.
Let's call him Philip right now.
Yeah, yeah. So I just forgot the name of the character. Like. But it does. Philip is doing everything in his power to make sure that that does not happen. So it's plausible that that could be a plot branch,
right?
I think,
yeah.
Or maybe it's wishful thinking too on my part. Sorry, I just spit all over you guys. But it's
interesting that
yeah, I think that would be interesting to see.
It's interesting that the parallel you draw is between Paige and Hans, because the parallel I was thinking about was between Paige and the babysitter.
Yes, I think that's going to be for the next episode.
Right.
But the parallel I saw for this episode was with Hans and Paige, and I do think they're setting it up, and I didn't notice that, but even with the previews at the end, I was like, okay, well, she's the daughter of such and such, but we'll touch on that. Mainly, I thought there was a parallel because you see Elizabeth doing this type of training that is kind of prepping her to eventually train her own daughter.
Right.
And so I find that to be interesting because we've never seen her do that before. So that was where I found the parallel.
Do you think that she'll be the one to train Paige?
Yes.
You think so?
Yes.
I think if they do go that direction of Paige, they're setting that up for sure. Yeah.
Without a doubt.
The other thing they're also setting up is a situation where they would lose Paige as a huge, huge like heartbreaker at the end of the season.
Oh my God, I hope they do. I really want them to kill someone, and I would love it.
If it was Paige?
Yeah. Oh, that'd be a total heartbreaker.
Sorry, she's great, but I guess I just don't really like children on TV.
Well, they're definitely setting up a situation where you could see that happen.
I think she's good. I want to set it for Paige for a second, because there a lot of child actors on TV shows like this can be really bad and really like distractingly bad annoying. She is not. And I think they've actually done a good job giving her a point of view and a personality and some agency, and that she seems like a smart character who's not who's not like totally, you know, Walter Jr. oblivious.
I'm not knocking the acting.
Yeah.
I just don't really like the character. She's growing on me this season, but previously I was like, why do we have to hear so much from this daughter? She's annoying the crap out of me. And then they set it up, and I was like, oh, okay, but can we kill her?
And speaking of budding spies, remember Henry who broke into the neighbor's house last season?
Yeah.
And I totally think, and I should almost say this for predictions, but I think he's going to sneak into the Beeman's house for a sneak peek.
Oh, she doesn't live there anymore,
though. Oh, that's right.
Yeah, they're divorced. So.
Well, who knows? Maybe
he'll sneak in somewhere.
The last parallel that I think I want to point out really quickly with Paige was, there's that scene where Philip comes home and she's on the couch. She says, I can't sleep. Mm-hmm. And he says, he apologizes. He asks, you know, she says, you have to stop worrying about me. And it brought to mind this moment where, you know, when you're growing up and you start to realize that your parent is just a person and they don't have all the answers anymore.
It's so sad.
There's like a Calvin and Hobbes comic where like their house gets broken into and he's like, oh man, like his dad's in bed. And he's like, I can't take care of my kid. I'm just a dude. And it reminded me of that because it's happening on both sides. She's kind of realizing my parents aren't the people I thought they were necessarily. There's something else going on and I can't necessarily rely on them. And he's realizing at the same time, I guess, that Carrie Russell is, but in a different way, I don't have complete control over my daughter for multiple reasons. Mm-hmm. And both sides, it was that moment of like, oh wow, this is a real realization, this epiphany for both of them.
It's such a relatable parenting thing too. This is, you know, my child becoming like an independent person who has her own thoughts and ideas.
With that said, she is only 14. And when Philip brought that up, it's true. It's not like she's 18. They want to give her this choice when she's not even actually an adult yet, you know? Mm-hmm. So that is where I can see it being a big issue. If it is actually a choice, that's great. But once you out yourself as a Russian spy, and let's say she's like, nah, I don't really want to do that. I mean, what are they going to do to her?
Where do you go from there?
Yeah. Oh, like, I guess turn her over to Moscow, right?
Right.
Well, in all fairness, though, she's, at least it comes off to me, that she's a pretty mature 14-year-old. I mean, she's pretty kind of forward thinking in that regard. Did anybody else get that sentiment?
No, yeah, I definitely get that feeling. But she's still
And this is where I think the babysitter plays it even in this episode, because, you know, they're listening in on this conversation between Paswell and this babysitter that's getting creepier and creepier.
On the babysitter side.
Yeah, she's totally coming on to him. She is the one, in theory, who has agency, but we know that a 14-year-old in that situation doesn't really know what they want,
she's
make
16.
A choice. Or 16, what, even still, a teenager.
Upstate New York, that's late.
Was it in 1982? I'm not even sure. But yes, you could tell that they're totally projecting, like, what if Paige was in this situation onto that scenario, and that's why they want to, that's why they're so, like, invested in getting involved.
The final scene in the episode between Frank Langella, whose character name is
Gabriel,
and Philip, was one of my favorite acting moments by Matthew Rhys in this show so far. I thought...
I agree.
I thought Philip, it really... Because he keeps saying throughout the last few episodes, she's just 14. She's 14 years old. And it was like, it's a great performance all throughout, but it gets a little redundant. And for some reason, the way that it happened at the end there, you could just see the frustration.
It came to a head for sure. It was great because it came right after he had just seen his wife almost get caught, right after he just yanked her tooth out, which we will touch upon. And so it was one of those moments where it was just like, I don't want her, when he said, you know, she shouldn't have to deal with this shit. And I was like, you're right. Like, this is a lot of crap. I wouldn't want my child to deal with this. So it was a great build up to see that finally just kind of be released, that it's not even about, it is partly about concern for a father for his daughter, but it is also about, my life is exhausting and I would not want my child to deal with this. Like, this is insane. You want me to agree to this.
And so, Gabriel keeps saying she's going to have a choice, but how could she really have a choice in that situation? And also, Gabriel plays the word Stygian during Scrabble, and that's a capitalized word. Should not be legal. I just want to point that out. It really bothered me. I saw
you write something down when they put that shot on the screen. I was like, what are you writing? But I guess...
Also weird that Russians are playing Scrabble instead of chess, right?
I knew a guy back in the day who used to pull that trick where he would like just make a word up and have an elaborate description in his head. Mm-hmm. And I was just a kid, and I thought he was like 10 years older, so I thought he was way cooler, so I just believed it every time. But like in retrospect, some of those words I've looked up, and they're just complete gibberish.
Yeah, total bullshit. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Phlox, it turns out, checks out. But Stygian, no go.
Well, you know, whatever works. On that note, so let's move on to the FBI, the CIA, the Russian, blah, 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 blah. all the governments working together. So what was everyone's take on that? We got to see a little bit touch on the CIA, who actually ran the chase of Elizabeth and Philip. We got to see a little interaction of Martha and an introduction to Agent Aderholt.
I feel like I'm getting sick of, and this is something I'm starting to notice in our culture, the way in these shows and movies we represent CIA and FBI people. Mm-hmm. But it feels like you grow up and the idea of if you're in the FBI or in the CIA, you're going to be this very capable, very intelligent, cunning, you know, gamesmanship kind of mind sort of person. But in these shows, they constantly end up as middle-aged, balding men who are out of shape and constantly seem to get outsmarted by, like, younger, cooler, more conniving people.
I think that's what happens.
Is that real? I mean, I'm not in the FBI. I'm not in the CIA.
I think it's a little disingenuous to perpetuate the idea of a very... I can't believe I'm saying this about my own government, but, you know, just perpetuate the idea of, like, a very smart, all-knowing... you know, a person that oversees, you know, the intelligence agencies of this country. I think they're all human, and so they have to kind of show those human traits. Yeah. I think that's more realistic to me than kind of this, like, all-powerful person.
Yeah, everyone, and for every agency, the Russian, what is it? It's not, I want to say syndicate, but that's not it. It's like the...
Department S, are you talking about?
The Politburo?
Where... Oleg and...
The Residentura.
I was like, why can't I think this way? I think they show very realistic people. So it's... The Residentura is kind of like an older, you know, established Russian man. The FBI is kind of an older, frumpy guy. CIA is a bunch of
I don't know. Ben, it is a good question, because I've basically only seen FBI and CIA agencies on TV.
Exactly.
I don't know what the makeup is in real
life.
That's
what I'm getting at.
But you do hear stories of, like, you know, them recruiting agents out of college or, like, out of young people, which would make a lot of sense.
And that's where I think – that's where you see people like Philip and Elizabeth.
Right.
So – but the people who are actually sitting at desk and doing the desk work, they are going to be older.
Probably, like, they're the guys who, you know, did the undercover, you know, white power stuff in
exactly.
the past, and now they're just
they're just like,
desk.
I'm
yeah.
tired. Do you know what I had to do when I was working with white supremacists? Do
right.
you know what I had to do when I was hunting down, like, yeah. Russians back in the 60s?
Aderholt all but asked Stan without actually asking him, like, did you lynch people? That was what I got
yeah,
out of the conversation.
Pretty much. He was definitely, like, poking and prodding to get that information.
I mean,
it's possible.
Yes.
It's possible.
I think he did.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna. That's gonna be my prediction, that it's gonna be revealed that he did that. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know.
Horrible
I think
stuff.
You have to. I mean, he even said you say what they want to hear
yeah.
over and over and over again. And who's to say that he didn't do what they wanted? What they want to do over and over again?
Yeah. yeah. 3 years undercover. Right?
Yeah. They're bound to test you somehow to see if you're legit.
That's what you have to do. So it was. We got to see a little touch upon all the agencies tonight. We got a little bit more about the CIA. These flies, man. So, Martha. So, there was a prediction that you had last week that Martha and Stan would get together.
And I'm standing by it. I don't think anything's happening to this new guy.
I don't know.
You don't think he's going to get
some?
He
was pretty
some
charming.
Yeah. Going on.
She did smile.
She had little teeth.
She looked back.
Interesting, too, because Stan's last partner, remember, there was something going on with her in Amador back in season one.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yep. Well, you know, I think this is the year that, one, Stan finds out, and two, Martha dies. Because,
whoa, bold prediction.
Well, yeah, I'm way ahead. But just because Clark really doesn't want kids, Martha really does want kids.
Yeah.
And she's going to become an issue. And you could kind of see it on his face when she was like, we can just have a foster kid for a little bit. Kiss, kiss, kiss. And I was like, he's going to kill her. He's going to kill her. Like,
Philip's depravity as a character is pretty, like, startling when you really think about it.
I love him.
He's turned into, like,
but he's like, he is a horrible person.
Yeah, he's so depraved. I mean, God, I mean,
wait. Give an example of him being depraved.
Well, the look on his face when she's asking about kids.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, first of all, just proposing to her in the first place. He married her. He's a fake person.
Right.
Yeah. So that's just ridiculous to begin with. But then it's for his job. But then she's like, I want kids. You got the sense there he was considering weighing the options. Oh, could I maybe do this?
I think he only had the sense when they're like third season or second season when he and Elizabeth were having issues. Then I think he might have kind of, maybe. But no, he doesn't. He's already dealing with his own kid stuff.
I could see them going the full and opposite of your prediction. They actually, like, adopt a child. I mean, because it was crazy in the first place for them to get married.
I mean,
that just seems like such a complex thing to navigate. I don't think Philip wants a child with Martha. I really don't.
No.
I don't see, even to just the kind of, like, quench her desire for that, just to kind of have her not nag him about it. It just seems like it would be just, it would complicate things. It definitely would. I mean, another human being complicates things in the most simple of life situations. So I can't imagine that he would want to run that risk.
Here's a quick question from a horrible moment that involved Philip. And this will be for you guys and also for the viewers. Comment and let us know which was more, like, uncomfortable to watch. Him having to break the bones.
We'll get to that.
Oh, okay.
Hold on. Don't talk about that yet.
The tooth?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Don't talk about that.
We have to issue, like, a trigger warning
thought,
first
yeah.
for people.
Hold
with, like,
I'm waiting
thought.
To talk about this, too. So I'm there with you,
no, I
call him Bateman, sorry. Ben.
I think with Martha, it's just, she eventually, something has to happen to her. Like, their marriage has to come to an end. And I don't think Philip or the Russians are going to be okay with him just fading away.
Maybe Philip will use this whole adopting a child situation as leverage in that, you know, he'll probably say, I've told you over and over again that I don't want a child. Now what I do want is a divorce.
She's got to die. There's no way they can get out of it without killing her.
That would raise a lot of questions.
This is the same man who broke up a woman who's married to someone who worked at the Pentagon's body, threw it in a luggage, and went on with
just from a cast composition perspective, Martha plays a crucial role because she's the only real, like, comic relief character in the show.
For now,
at least. Yeah. And It's the show's craziest high wire act. The fact that one of the two main characters has a whole secret marriage going on.
Maybe it's just I
kind of want to see if they could keep it going all the way to the end of the series, and I wonder if they might try to do it.
It seems like the comic relief role is going to be replaced by the babysitter. Just kidding.
Gabriel seems pretty funny to me.
The one question I wanted to ask regarding Martha, though, was, first of all, it just seems a little bit unbelievable to me that it would have been this successful for this long, that he's married to someone and she's never gotten nosy enough to go further and expose him.
Well, she works in the FBI and he supposedly works in the CIA, so they're both in businesses where they're taught to not ask too many questions.
The second part to me would be, they've alluded a little bit to, she's like, oh, I bought a gun, I know you have a toupee.
Oh, yeah.
They've touched on that a little bit. So does she know more than they're letting on to us yet, do we think?
No, I think it's the gun on the wall. So I think eventually the gun will be fired. I think they're just setting it up. So now this is the first act. You see the gun on the wall. By the third act, it will be fired.
All right,
So on that note, moving on. So now we can talk about Elizabeth and Philip. Yeah. We can talk about
Chekhov's nastiness. Because this has been brewing for a while. Yes. In fact, when I saw that toothache early in the show, I actually wrote in my notes, oh, I am not looking forward to some sort of like basement tooth extraction scene that's going to happen at some point soon. Then it happened.
It had to happen. And I am happy that they did that. I am happy that it didn't become like a whole episode of her like trying to sneak into the dentist.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and it was such a sweet moment between them. When he finally has to pull her tooth.
The second half, I think, leading up to it.
Where it's just, she's so afraid. And you never see Elizabeth afraid. You see her, like, hurt. You see her angry. You see her frustrated. But it's really rare you see her afraid and shaken. So when she comes into the house and, you know, she's not shaking. She's not hysterical. She just has, like, tears in her eyes. And you see, like, oh, this is so close. Like, it's always been this close. But this time, it was like, no.
By a hair.
She just got out. So to have that happen, and then for them to try and kiss, and it hurts her, and he's like, okay, enough of this. Like, I want to sleep with my wife.
Yeah.
Pull that tooth.
It actually was. Unlike the baggage dismemberment scene from last episode, because you just asked a question comparing the two.
Yeah.
It's...
Which was worse? Let us know.
I'm going to say last week was worse. Yeah, this week was... strangely kind of beautiful as well as very unpleasant to watch.
They were looking at each other's eyes and he was waiting and there was like such a great, just Keri Russell and Matthew Rhys.
Yeah.
Rhys.
Their chemistry is just so amazing. And what they can do in a scene where they don't even talk to each other. They didn't say anything to each other. And that was probably about a 5 minute to 8 minute scene where there was no dialogue. And you could understand everything that they were communicating. It was just so beautiful.
I've got to give props to the direction of that scene, too. They really used a lot of close-ups, which we haven't seen a whole lot on the show to this point so far. Like, really zooming in on her eyes towards the very end. And it made it very, very intimate. And there was really, you could feel the total lack of distance between them. Really almost their most intimately staged scene so far this season.
Yeah.
Or the show. I mean, like you said, 5 or 6 minutes of silence with just expressions. Pretty impressive.
It was nice to see even Gabriel kind of comment on how their relationship has changed so much that she looks at him differently.
But it's not all positive when Gabriel says it. He's like, Elizabeth is looking at you differently. A little suspicious.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's still his job to kind of be like, don't get too close. But what do you expect? They've been together for like 15, 16 years. Come on. Like, it's going to happen.
Also, Gabriel is strangely affectionate with Elizabeth. You get that, right?
Yeah,
I get that, but I think of it more as like a fatherly type thing. I think, if anything, you could also say that Gabriel commenting on that might also mean that he might eventually use that against them.
Right.
That's just something to consider.
Did we think, by the way, so we talked about how close the car chase or surveillance scene was, and it gets broken up by a car slamming into their car. We're supposed to expect that was a staged car from a Russian operative.
Yeah, they were doing the countdown. So it was like 30 seconds, 10 seconds. And then at the end of the 10 seconds, his car went forward, and another car hit, and then the car just took off.
But we were supposed to expect that there were between 6 and 9 cars behind them.
Well, that was why they did the scrambler. So there were between six and nine cars that were that were following them along different streets.
Right.
But the way that they had it was, and this is what Aderholt was complaining about, is they actually only had one car who had a visual. So there were other cars around. So if the car who had the visual was able to get her to stop, they would all come in and, like, kind of, you know, lock her in. But because they didn't have that, they were able to kind of just focus on that one car.
Gotcha.
Get that car to lose visual, and then that's when she could run. And then when they did the scramble, it was so that he couldn't say, I'm losing her, oh, I've been hit, or anything like that, so someone else could jump on.
So the question I have is this, and so this kind of speaks to the same thing as before with the FBI agents and CIA agents, none of whom I know in real life. The way she talks about surveillance while she's training Hans, mm-hmm. and then the way that car set up in the rearview mirror, and I saw this guy, and it's the color of the jeans and all that, how realistic is... Like, this is something that, like, Jason Bourne does, where he's like, I saw there's 7 guys in there, and this guy weighs this much. It's one of those movie things and those TV things that you're supposed to believe they could all just sort of do this.
It probably is a movie thing, but...
How realistic do you guys think that is?
I think you can train yourself.
Yeah, and how else would you be able to recall or assess the best way to escape a situation where you may be cornered if you don't have that kind of detailed memory?
Owen is being very observant. I bet if you walked into a mall and just stood around watching the people for a while, you'd get pretty good at noticing those little details.
Think so?
I will say
it's a lot.
And this is kind of weird, but as a woman, especially if you're somewhere late at night. And you're by yourself or something, you do that automatically. You start taking surveillance of what's going on. At least I do. I don't know.
You
if
like watch guys around you and it's like, is that guy going to be a creep or something?
Yeah. So like if you see somebody and they're acting a little suspicious, or if somebody's like kind of come on to you in a way and you go away and 20, 30 minutes later you see them again, then that kind of causes you to kind of go, okay, I need to stay alert. I need to be aware of my situation, what's going on. But it's just, I think that's also just a natural thing. It's a very mm-hmm. primal thing to be aware of what's going on around you.
Yeah.
And they just kind of hone in on that. And I think that's
Yeah, if you've been training thing. That particular skill set for a while, I think you can get really, really good at it.
Yeah, it's fair. I just was wondering, I was thinking about how difficult that would be to actually... And then the information has to leave. That's the thing, is when you're doing it that consistently.
It's like acting.
How do you let go?
Yes, it is a lot like acting.
Backlog. Yeah.
And talking about spycraft, some killer wigs this episode. Those yeah. glasses.
And those glasses, man.
Those glasses are amazing.
My favorite, if I could find them.
I just want to call and be like, who is your wig maker?
Yeah.
Can I get their number?
If we ever get either of them on the show, I think we should just have like a lineup of all their different disguises.
And ask them
at your favorite three. Right. What are your favorite three?
That is the best one.
But speaking of that, and also that whole scene in the open house, just once again, some great thematic subtext running throughout the entire show, mm-hmm. and some great continuing critiques of capitalism that have been going on. I wrote down the line, the production of too many useful things results in too many useless people.
Yeah.
Great line.
That was a great line. Mm-hmm. I mean, That's a quote.
I think she said it was Marx. Yeah. I'm not positive. I'll have to look. I think that is Marx.
Yeah, but you know, it's really nice to see that dynamic of what countries think of other countries. Even with the end scene with Zenaida, and she's talking about how she's so against what the Soviet Union is doing in Afghanistan, and it's just so irony.
Is anyone else suspicious of Zenaida? Am I the only one that's picking up on something strange?
They kind of alluded to that later, because I think Stan at the very end he kind of goes, something is up with her. And that kind of also alludes to what Stan was saying earlier, just make them think that everything they're saying is right.
Oh, right.
So Zenaida could not be a defector, she could be another spy.
Well, they've given you that sense that there's something up a little bit, even just from the second definitely. She sits down, she's coming on the Milky Way, and she says, this is delicious. Mm-hmm. As the guy asks her the question, you're like, oh, you're placating us. What's going on? Why are you acting that way?
Well, I saw that as a little critique of capitalism as well, at least, that she's, you know, she's kind of seduced by these the new shiny American things. Mm-hmm. And again, here, when you see them walk into the kid's room, and it's full of all this stuff, and Elizabeth's just like, you know, why all these things? Mm-hmm. It's just a house full of things. And then you see Paswell, who's talking about how he's way in debt. He's desperately in need of money because he's just been, like, working and working and then buying stuff for his family and spending himself into debt. And it's just that a very American downward spiral.
Or Hans commenting on, should he get stonewashed jeans?
Or the stonewashed jeans.
Which is an interesting commentary.
A very interesting historical reference to the fact that, for a long time in Soviet Russia, blue jeans were the most coveted item, and it was like a major source of trade and smuggling. People would basically buy things of jeans instead of with rubles because they were worthless.
They're very clever on the show in general. They like to just throw you like little tiny things that just sort of wink at you.
Yeah.
Like,
did you notice to remind you of where you are?
Do you notice when Philip was on the payphone and he makes the call and he says, It's the coded message. I'll be home late for dinner in 10:45. Did you guys notice there was an American flag sticker on the payphone?
I did notice that.
No, I didn't notice
that. I didn't.
I thought maybe that was even a coded, like, this is their payphone. They marked it because it's with the American flag.
Something, yeah. It's just that funny stuff.
Or even with the very end, they're always just kind of letting you know, like, where they are in time, where they take off the picture of Brezhnev, I'm horrible with Russian, and they put Yuri Andropov on top. Mm-hmm. So they're letting you know, like, these are things that are changing.
This is the year.
Yeah, they're consistent throughout, which I definitely appreciate for this show, because a lot of... Is this a period piece? Yeah, period pieces. Those details tend to kind of get lost, and they're very noticeable oftentimes. So I appreciate the fact that their attention to detail is so great.
Yeah. We also know that
30 to 35 years ago now, for sure, it's a period piece.
Yeah, we also know
that. I was born in the 80s, so wait a second.
We also know that they are, to some degree, skating with historical accuracy with this show because it is based on a true story, and this is a real event that happened. I'm sure they've embellished it, taken some liberties, but there is actual text of this story to go on.
Yeah.
And with that said, should we just go ahead and go into predictions?
Let's do it.
Sounds good. Oh, the predictions music. I love this music.
And the lights.
Love the flashing lights.
So, Josh, you want to start us off?
I will start us off. I'm thinking, first of all, Stan and Martha are still hooking up. I'm standing by it. But the whole Elizabeth thing, the fact that she's almost gotten caught a few times by now, it's leading to something. I think she's actually going to get caught. Mm. I think something's actually going to happen where she's detained for a long period, maybe even separated from Philip and the kids for multiple episodes. Mm. Something like that. The recklessness can't just keep happening. At this point, how many spies lasted the field for 15, 16 years? Something has to happen. Something has to change.
A lot of them last a lot longer than that, I think. But
really? I was going to say that most of them, it's got to be much shorter.
Just retire.
This particular story is they were in the field for over 20, I think.
Is it really?
Yeah, I believe so.
My prediction is that Martha will probably be clued in on a lot more of what's happening with regards to Phil and Elizabeth's relationship. Or she'll grow more suspicious of that, and we're going to see kind of her pursuit of that truth a little more. Coming up very soon.
I think I'm going to stick to my earlier wild prediction. I think there's going to be a violent reaction from Philip regarding Paige and the treatment of Paige by the Russians. I think he's going to kill someone, or he's going to do something rash by the end of the season.
I could see that.
You'll get your wish.
Kill her. No.
or maybe they try to kill her and then kill Henry instead. I'm just like,
that would suck.
Or he kills his own daughter. No one can have
TV.
You.
Yeah, very classic TV.
That would really suck.
Kill an irrelevant character that has like emotional stakes.
Yes.
I think, I don't think it's going to be Elizabeth that gets caught. I think it's going to be Philip. I think they're going to do a twist because he's so deep with having the whole Clark character in the FBI. I think it's going to be one of those occurrences where Adderholt's going to see Philip outside of his Clark persona, and then he's going to be introduced to Clark, and he's going to make the connection.
Right.
And that will be the thing that kind of burst everything wide open. So I don't actually think, as careless as she is, I think it's kind of a red herring. They're just trying to like sidetrack
us. Might be right. I wouldn't be surprised.
The other, I mean, it also might just be that Martha meets Elizabeth, not as Elizabeth.
She's already met Elizabeth as Clark's sister.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No, I know that. I'm saying she might meet her as Elizabeth, where she's not all glasses and hair. She might meet her in a situation where she looks very different. You know what I mean?
I think
and then Martha, thinks that it's like a Philip's secret lover, which she'd be pretty right about. And then Martha tries to shoot Elizabeth with that gun.
I was maybe for saying something like that would happen.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows? We'll see. We shall see. That's why it's called prediction. So, Where can everyone find everyone, Josh?
Well, find me at Radio TFP on Twitter, and you can also go to joshrichmond.net for other assorted fun.
You can find me at Julian Dujeric on Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, Google+. I still have a MySpace. I try to delete it. It won't let me.
It won't let you.
I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Ben Bateman Media. Find me there.
I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Miss Adrian Snow. That's Adrian Snow for people who can't watch us. All right. I think that about wraps up our show for this week.
Thank you
guys so much for tuning in.
Good show.
Yeah, it was amazing.
All right. Amazing.
Till next week, you guys.
Later, guys.
Bye, everybody.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.